When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So, Patrick, tell us, who are you and what do you do?
My name is Patrick George. I'm the editor-in-chief of InsideEVs.com, and I'm a contributor to The Atlantic and The Verge and a few other publications.
Patrick is a car guy. He's covered the auto industry for years, and these days he's focused on electric vehicles. So, fair to say he's now an EV guy. Thanks to his job, Patrick does a lot of test driving. Last week, he tested out a fancy Mercedes EV. It was an SUV with a six-figure price tag. He lent it out to his wife. She didn't love it.
She borrowed it for a bit to go run some errands, and I asked her, like, just bring it back with a full charge because we have to drive back to New York City that night. And I just had the worst time getting the car to connect to any of the public chargers that are near us in upstate New York. And just kind of calls me screaming, jumping up and down. She's like, the software won't work. It won't connect to the car. And she's like, did you know it was like this? And I said, yes. She's like, but it's, and you knew it was this bad? And I'm like, yes, I do. And she's like, but it has to get better than this for everybody or it's not going to work and no one's going to go for it. I'm like, yes, exactly. So I was like, welcome to my world. And you've perfectly seen and illustrated the problem that beguiles this industry and many people who want to do the right thing and drive electric, but have a lot of roadblocks in their way.
And that's the thing. More people want to move away from gas-powered cars. And this year, a lot of Americans actually did, buying more EVs than ever before. But nationwide, our charging infrastructure just isn't where it needs to be. And many Americans aren't so sure about making the full switch just yet. So a lot of folks are turning to hybrid vehicles that use both gas and electricity. And that's posing a problem for the automakers who are trying to go all in on electric and not fuss around with this middle ground, and, more crucially, for the climate. Because hybrids, while better than your typical internal combustion engine, still rely on gas. And if we want to phase out car emissions in the coming years, we'll have to move on from them eventually.
That's the problem, which is that some car companies want to make hybrids and see this as this great bridge from gas cars to fully electric cars. You know, you can build up your battery supply, you cut down on gas use, cut down on emissions in the meantime, get people used to it. And then other car companies like General Motors and Volkswagen, probably most notably, are looking at this and they're saying, why are we have to spend billions and billions of dollars on building out EVs, on building out battery plants, building out software for these electric vehicles, all of this really advanced technology. We don't want to waste that money on, you know, what's going to be ultimately a dead end.
Right.
On hybrid cars. And so, you know, some of these car companies, they've got a great, you know, lineup of hybrids to choose from if that's what you want right now. And the other ones are just like, sorry, no, you know, here are our gas cars and here are our EVs and that's the way we're going and you're just going to need to kind of deal with it.
So today on the show, Patrick explains why Americans, more than 20 years since Toyota introduced the Prius, have fallen back in love with hybrid cars. Will they ease drivers into an electric future? Or will they run us off the road? I'm Emily Peck, filling in for Lizzie O'Leary, and you're listening to What Next TBD, a show about tech, power, and how the future will be determined. Stick around.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank, USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
If you want to understand what is happening in the United States right now, you really need to understand what's happening with the courts, the law, and the Supreme Court. The battle between democracy and whatever this cage match is that we're witnessing, it's going to be won and lost at the ballot box, but it's also going to be won and lost in the courtrooms. I'm Dahlia Lithwick. I host Slate's legal podcast, Amicus, and we are doubling our output, bringing you weekly episodes from here on in, because how else can we keep an eye on the many trials of Donald Trump, the conservative legal movement's assaults on our rights, the Supreme Court's latest slate of environmental gutting, gun safety eviscerating cases on the docket? So follow Amicus wherever you get your podcasts, new episodes dropping every Saturday morning.
So to back up a little bit, let's just talk about like who's buying what cars right now. What proportion of the market is EVs right now?
We just got to the point where EVs are about 10% of the U.S. car market, which is the biggest it's ever been. So it's great for the U.S. I think it's 12% in Canada. It's significantly lower than Europe, or I believe they're at about 20% across the board there. Some European countries, I think Norway, they're up to like 90% now. Like that ship has kind of sailed in Norway.
Scandinavian countries, they're just lapping us. They're always lapping us.
At everything. Healthcare, they just got it all. The whole nine yards. Yeah. China is rapidly moving to, these EVs. And they do a really great job of hybrid cars as well.
And you said the proportion in the U.S. of EVs is 10%. What's hybrids? What's the proportion of hybrids?
As part of this growth that we've seen this year, hybrids now make up nearly 10% of new car sales. And that's a number that's more than doubled since 2020. So if you're looking at EVs and hybrids together, that's 20% of the new car market in America, which is really fantastic to see.
Yeah, that's astonishing. The EVs, though, I still think of them as pretty expensive. I think I read the average price is like $50,000 for an EV. Is that right? Are they still a little too pricey for widespread adoption?
Yeah, you're exactly right. There's a few trends at work there that are really unfortunate for the consumer right now. One is that you're absolutely right that new cars in general are more expensive than ever. Since the pandemic, they've skyrocketed. Last I checked, I think that the average new car price in America, all in, is about $47,000-$48,000, which is far higher than it's ever been and ever was before. Your average EV is still going to be slightly higher than that. We are seeing those prices begin to fall. Based on the data I've seen, we're approaching what's called price parity with gas vehicles, like meaning cost to build these EVs. Like it's getting closer to the cost of what we're used to these days. And they've gone down. Like many dealers are offering discounts on their EVs. The automakers are seeing that the sales are kind of up and down. They're offering discounts and help. So it's getting better, but on the whole, these EVs are more expensive than, their gas car counterparts. I just drove the Chevrolet Blazer EV in California, which is the ones I drove were about $63,000. And you can get a very nice gas Blazer for about $45,000. And I could see a lot of Chevrolet consumers sort of looking at that like, well, why would I spend 20 grand more on the electric car?
Well, I mean, you never have to buy gas for it. That's a huge savings.
It is for sure. And I think that's kind of an undersold benefit to these things. You still pay for electricity when you fast charge, but on the whole, this is vastly less money than filling up, like a large gas SUV would. So there's definitely benefits there.
Amid all this, President Biden has done quite a bit to move the U.S. toward EV adoption. Under his administration, the EPA instituted new rules that force automakers to limit emissions and encourage more EV production. The president's landmark climate legislation provides a chunky tax credit to Americans who buy certain EVs. The administration is also providing funding directly to automakers to help them transition to electric. And the companies themselves have spent billions. But while the market for EVs has grown, it hasn't moved as quick as car makers have wanted.
It's deeply confusing, and there's been kind of this narrative that's ran away this year that I haven't really loved, which is that this has been a great year for EV sales. It's been phenomenal. I think it's the best sales year Tesla's ever had, for example, by far. But we're not seeing that it's just this permanent up and to the right curve. It is kind of an up and down thing. You've seen a lot of early adopters who got these things, Now you're seeing people kind of like they're in the wait and see moment. They're waiting for charging to get better. They're waiting for the prices to go down. And I think these automakers are really struggling to develop cars at prices people want and prices that they can afford. I think people want affordable cars, period, but they're not getting them. They're really certainly not getting them in the EV market. I think that's part of the appeal of the hybrid right now. It's like you don't see those sky-high prices for these hybrid models. This is a bit of a premium over gas car, but it's not, you know, an unbelievable amount of money, and you don't need dramatic changes to your lifestyle yet either, like you would for a full EV.
Further compounding the problem is the fact that EVs are still an emerging technology. Many people are waiting for adoption to become more widespread before making the jump.
In the next few years, like we're going to see all of these cars are actually going to change what type of plug they use for fast charging. They're all going to go to Tesla's type of plug, which will give everybody access to the Tesla charging network, which is excellent. So, you know, if you buy one of these now, I don't want to say you're going to be locked into a dead technology, but I think leasing something for 3 years, trying this out, getting used to the electric lifestyle, seeing how this works for you, I think that's kind of the smart play as this technology matures and kind of becomes more for everyone. There's probably going to be several iPhone moments for electric vehicles as opposed to just one thing. I think it's going to be faster charging. We've got to see the charging experience get better. Yeah. You know, the part of the story I didn't tell you earlier with my poor wife trying to charge this Mercedes was, you know, you have to use a smartphone app to pay for that and to activate it. And the smartphone app and, you know, the charging network and your car software all have to work perfectly in tandem. No. If any one of those things fails, it's not going to work. And it's like, okay, this is objectively not as seamless as getting gasoline. It just isn't. So I think that making that experience much easier and foolproof and seamless and ubiquitous, that's what's going to do it, I think. And I mean, so many of these EVs are there, they're close to it, but it's still a lot of planning ahead to ask people to do, especially if they're, yeah, I kind of think about the difference between me who does this for work and covers this and someone who I know might be a single mother with three children and is just trying to get them to school or activities or whatever on time. It does not have a lot of backup. And it's like, okay, you're expecting that person to work charging into their life like they would now. Like, we're going to need to make some concessions to make this work for everybody. And I don't think we're there yet.
When we come back, are hybrids a path towards full EV adoption or a detour from the future we want?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Hey, listeners, whether you love true crime or comedies, celebrity interviews, news, or even motivational speakers, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue, right? And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance, too. Enter the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. The Name Your Price tool puts you in charge of your auto insurance by working just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance. Then they'll show you a variety of coverages that fit within your budget, giving you options. Now, that's something you'll want to press play on. It's easy to start a quote, and you'll be able to choose the best option for you fast. It's just one of the many ways you can save with Progressive Insurance. Quote today at progressive.com to try the Name Your Price tool for yourself and join over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
So to get back to hybrids, can you just explain to me, I read about plug-in hybrids and then hybrid hybrids, and I don't understand. What is it just literally one you plug in, the other you don't have to recharge? Or?
Yeah, you nailed it, actually. So the plug-in hybrids, like the battery can be recharged by the gasoline engine, but they're really meant to be plugged in overnight to give it a full battery there. I think we're going to see more and more of these get phased out over the next few years. It feels almost counterintuitive, right? But the automakers, they don't seem to want to make them. They had a huge moment in Europe in the recent years where corporations were getting a lot of subsidies to lease these in their corporate fleets. And people just weren't plugging them in. And so, you know, when you don't do that, the car doesn't work right. So you're driving around with a gas engine with a heavier car because now you're lugging around a dead battery. And they were worse on emissions. And they were worse on gas. And I think that that's just being sort of, I'm not sure what kind of, how much of a future those have. But then the pure hybrids, like most Toyota Priuses, are just going to recharge the battery themselves by normal driving, that by the gasoline engine, by braking. And that's a really seamless experience. It's you buy the car, you put gas in occasionally, and you really don't worry about it otherwise.
But in your reporting, you said a lot of people feel like they don't even need an EV because they have a hybrid. It serves their needs. I mean, what do those examples look like?
Yeah, I think that one thing that's interesting with the latest generation of hybrids we're seeing, which are really excellent cars. I mean, some of these will run on pure electricity for 30, 40 miles. And if you look at your average American, like that's most of the driving we do in a day is 30, 40
right?
miles.
We think we're all like out on the road with Jack Kerouac or whatever, but we're just going to like the supermarket and the mall.
Exactly. So, and we have this weird obsession with road trips and range. Right. And you're seeing this bleed over into the EV world too. And I've talked to car companies like BMW and Toyota. It's like, look, we don't really want to make 600 mile EVs, and environmentally it's kind of a disaster, but like we're going to see what we could do, because that's what you Americans say you want. So I think that people are a little bit unrealistic with their expectations. But, you know, with hybrids, it's like, yeah, if you buy this car, you'd be surprised how much gas you don't use in it. Mm. And there are several models and several of my colleagues even who are hybrid owners. And every now and then they'll get an alert on the car. Like, look, you need to drive this thing more. You need to run the gas engine more. The gas is getting stale. Like,
oh, wow.
You know, it'll tell you. It's like this needs to be ran a little bit, which I think is quite funny.
I would imagine playing into the popularity of hybrids this year was the very high gas prices we just had, mostly last year, but people don't forget so fast, right? I mean, we had like $5 gas, and in America, that's real bad. So that must have played a role here too.
It did, for sure. And that's a trend I've seen throughout my entire career. Americans, you know, for all of our many great qualities and strengths as a people, we tend to think about 5 minutes into the future only. And almost always what we see is when gas gets expensive, people buy Priuses. And and when gas gets cheap again, they buy Hummers and Silverados. That is just what we do and how we operate. And as you both know, it's like we've seen a tremendous amount of ups and downs in gas prices in recent years. You know, fracking kept gas very cheap for a very long time. It's been going up again because of rising energy costs. So a tipping point would be like a permanent upward shift in gas prices that makes this permanently more expensive at the pump than it's ever been. I think that would see a very rapid shift to electric vehicles very quickly. Who knows how or if that would ever happen.
As consumers start clamoring for hybrids, that puts manufacturers in a tough spot. Some of the biggest automakers, like General Motors and Volkswagen, stopped producing hybrids altogether as they focused on EVs. Now they're rethinking that approach.
Those automakers, they're kind of looking at the market and they're wondering, maybe we should do this. Maybe we should, you know, offer this option to people and invest that R&D in it. But I think that they know that if they do that, they take that step, it's probably going to delay their pure EV investments.
Right.
And maybe that would work out okay for them, the emphasis on for them, because, you know, we're seeing this sort of slower up and down pace with EV adoption. That's not what they want to see. They want to see, you know, a rapid phase out of gas cars and a rapid adoption of EVs to replace them. And I don't think those things are going to happen in straight lines anymore. So it is a real dilemma for these car companies to figure out what to offer, especially as they're facing, you know, very strict fuel economy rules and emissions rules, which is really the driver behind this whole thing. Is, you know, if you gave any of these car companies a pass, I think they'd be making the same cars they made in the 50s and 60s if you didn't regulate this stuff. So, you know, if you're being pushed in that zero emission direction or stricter fuel economy rules, like what do you do? Do you do hybrids or do you EVs or hope the consumer adopts one or the other? It is a tricky situation to be in.
But I mean, the bigger picture here, zooming out, is the climate. Good luck to the auto manufacturers. But I mean, is the fact that so many more consumers are turning to hybrids, I mean, is that a good thing or a bad thing for the climate? Like, what does that mean in terms of meeting goals?
Yeah, great question. And the best answer I can give you is it's good news, but it's not as good news as it could be. Because you know, these hybrids, one of the many benefits that I don't think we think about too much is that they do create far less emissions.
Right.
I think the current Toyota Sienna minivan is hybrid only. It is, you know, the only one you can buy is a hybrid. And, you know, it creates less than half the carbon emissions than its predecessor, which was a non-hybrid. Like, that's very impressive. That is awesome progress. Let's take a W where we can right now in the climate apocalypse, right? But, you know, on a long term, you know, this slowing down the adoption of full EVs and moving us to a zero emission market, anything that slows that down, that is bad news for the climate. That is bad news for the planet. earlier this week on Inside EVs, one of our contributors, the wonderful environmental journalist Molly Taft, had a story about this. And she kind of looked at automakers like Ford and General Motors and Volkswagen that might be slowing down their EV goals a little bit. Mm-hmm. And she kind of wondered, like, what does this mean for climate change? And what she determined was, the cars that Ford sold globally last year alone, like worldwide, over the course of their lifetimes, they will generate more greenhouse gas emissions than the entire country of Taiwan emits in 1 year.
Jeez.
That's just Ford over the course of their lifetimes, one automaker. So you're seeing how serious this is, mm-hmm. and why it's imperative to replace these cars, new cars, with zero emission ones. Now, it's like you don't get rid of all of the problems when you do that. We know that. It takes a lot of emissions to build electric vehicles.
Yeah.
And what do you do with the countless gas cars that are going to be on the roads and in service for decades to come? I have yet to get a good answer on that one. But it's like, if we have to start somewhere, this is not an action that can be pushed off much longer, I think.
So what I'm hearing, I think, is hybrids are better than nothing, but it would be even better to just switch right over to EVs and have zero emissions, or sort of zero emissions, because there's a lot of emissions involved in building the cars. And also, I mean, we haven't really talked about it, but there's climate impacts for EVs separate from the fossil fuel issue, right? I mean, and mm-hmm. mining a lot of the minerals you need to build the batteries creates its own sort of Pandora's box of stuff.
It does, for sure. And like there's been massive inroads have been made into battery recycling plants, mm-hmm. Which is not something that we can do for gas cars. In theory, we could keep repurposing lithium ion batteries for a very long time and create kind of a more sustainable ecosystem doing that. I'm not convinced it's a silver bullet yet. But you're right. It is tricky because seeing more hybrids on the road is good, but it's not the zero emission transformation we need. And the more I've covered this stuff, the more I really feel like this, what we're seeing now is stuff that we should have been doing in the 90s. Back when we were really becoming cognizant of the realities of climate change, when the first hybrids were coming out, this industry should have been going like largely hybrid in the 2000s, for example, and building up a zero emission infrastructure and path forward in the last decade, the 2010s. Unfortunately, on multiple fronts, that's not where we're at. So we're like scrambling to play catch up now at a very difficult time for this act.
On top of that, the elephant in the room of every interview I do right now is the election.
And, the election, yes.
What happens to EVs? Should a Republican administration be in charge in 2025?
Yeah, this is going to be very interesting to see. And I've told my staff at Inside EVs this. It's like, look, gear yourselves up. Like, we're going to be covering the election next year, whether you want to or not. Like, we're already seeing electric vehicles become kind of a culture war issue. You're seeing GOP politicians sort of lashing out against them. That's one thing. But the more important thing is if the White House changes hands, whether it's Trump or Haley or DeSantis or any of those candidates, I think will reverse the Biden administration's EPA rules very quickly.
Yeah.
And those are the rules that are pushing us to, 50% EVs by 2030 in America, hopefully all EV new car sales by 2035. Like, I see that going out the window. I know this because it has already happened once. When Trump was president, he rolled back the Obama fuel economy standards, made those a lot weaker. And I think that, for a few years, the auto industry responded in the interest of profits, because of course they did. And they kept cranking out gas cars and big trucks and fewer hybrids and fewer EVs. It's these mandates, these government mandates, agree with them or not, that sort of get us moving in the zero emission direction.
Yeah.
And I unfortunately don't see any sort of climate answer with transportation on the GOP side. So, if those policies get reversed, like, you will see a slowdown in a move to electric vehicles in this country. I do believe that.
And I guess for my last question, I mean, what's it going to take for us to get comfortable buying EVs, to not feel like it's a risky thing to do, or I'm buying something that is going to, I won't be able to charge it, or the app is going to fail, or whatever. What's it going to take?
Yeah, I want to be cautiously optimistic here, actually. Like I said, I think that some of the sales trends we've seen are exciting. I think it's an education thing too. And I've been an auto journalist for about 10 years myself. And almost all of that, I covered mostly gas cars because this is still a new-ish thing. It's hard to understand the world of electric cars until you live it, until you drive these things and you try it and you see what charging is like. And you're like, oh, okay, I could actually make this work. And when you see what home charging is like, there's a lot of misconceptions, a lot of fear. And almost everyone I've shown this technology to or I've let them experience it or drive it themselves, they kind of get it after a while. So I think that maybe it's on the part of the automakers or the dealers even or policymakers to kind of educate people and show them, like, this is what it's like. This is what you're in for. You're probably not going to get stuck. It's not going to ruin your life. Here are the headaches you're going to have to deal with. They are getting better. It is kind of showing people the way forward. And again, in the spirit of optimism, I think one thing we could take away from the success of hybrids this year is that people do want to break up with gasoline. If you give them a reason not to pay at the pump, like, they're going to take it. And I think that this you know, hopefully would be the ultimate reason to be doing that. So maybe there's some progress to be found in that trend as well.
Patrick, thank you so much.
Emily, thank you so much for having me on. It's been wonderful.
Patrick George is the editor-in-chief at Inside EVs and a contributing writer at The Atlantic. And that's it for our show today. What Next TBD is produced by Evan Campbell, Patrick Fort, and Anna Phillips. Our show is edited by Mia Armstrong-Lopez. Alicia Montgomery is Vice President of Audio for Slate. TBD is part of the larger What Next family. TBD is also part of Future Tense, a partnership of Slate, Arizona State University, and New America. If you're a fan of the show, I have a request for you. Become a Slate Plus member. Just head on over to slate.com/whatnextplus to sign up. The TBD team is taking a little break for the holidays, but we'll be back in January. I'm Emily Peck, filling in for Lizzie O'Leary, and you can catch me on Saturdays at Slate Money. Thanks for listening.